Welcome to this week's Investors Chronicle Personal Finance Podcast. I'm Lenora Walters, and joining me today are Kate Bealey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor, Personal Finance Writer Emma Ajimang, and special guest Michelle McGrade, Chief Investment Officer at TD Direct Investing. Like the rest of the nation, you are probably still digesting the results of the referendum, that the UK will leave the European Union, and the uncertainties and risks that lie ahead, especially for investors. Markets and sterling have been plummeting, and it is likely that there will be a great deal of turmoil in the months ahead as the UK negotiates its position of Europe and our economic prospects remain very uncertain. Michelle, markets are all over the place. What should investors, in particular people saving over the long term for goals like retirement, do?
Okay, so actually what they should be doing right this minute today, they should really just sit on the sidelines and watch what is happening. Do not do anything. And most importantly, do not panic and sell, because there's a lot of noise in the market right now. So it's very important that they do that. The second thing that they must do is they must continue to think of their portfolio for the long term. Because what is really important here is that the world isn't going to end. You know, the UK is the fifth largest economy in the world. Companies here are strong, and they've got huge potential. Also, now that we are leaving the European Union, it's going to take some time, and it's probably going to take roughly 2 years, because that's what they're saying. Article 50, the mechanism for which we can leave the Union, will take about 2 years to invoke. And so actually, once the dust settles down, it'll be business as usual for the world.
Okay, perhaps no immediate impact and under a process before this happens. But that said, what would you say are the biggest risks for investors in the months ahead?
Okay, so the interesting thing, I think, is to put this into context, is the UK market is only down 4 or 5% at the moment. So we're not even back to February lows. Sterling has weakened, but again, not back to February lows. So some of this referendum risk has already been priced into markets. But looking forward, what people should worry about a little bit, I think, is probably Europe, because the unintended consequence of what has happened is that the countries within the European Union, the other countries within the European Union, will start to say, well, what should we be doing? So the currency and uncertainty is going to move from us, and it's going to move over into Europe. So I think that's an area probably to be less focused on. The other area that investors need to be aware of is that interest rates around the world, and definitely in the UK, are probably not going to rise, and so, especially in the short term. So that's going to affect customers, especially investors, and especially those ones who want income. So they should be very aware of that. Now, and in terms of just general investing, I think that actually that there is little to fear, really. As I said, I think companies in the UK are in good shape, especially the large cap exporters, with sterling a little bit weaker. That is very, very good for them. I think that the UK itself, once the dust settles down and business goes back to usual, you know, companies are in good shape as well. And so, actually, from a UK equity point of view, I really don't have that many worries going forward. I mean, I've been listening to what other economists have been saying, and a lot of economists have been saying with a Brexit that we'll be going into recession. Now, I just actually don't see why that would happen, because as of today, people in the UK have said that they don't want to be part of the economic union. But as of today, nothing else changes. So it's going to take, as I said earlier, it's going to take a while for these changes to come into play. And what's going to be really important is the negotiation that's going to take place between ourselves in Europe and then the rest of the world. So actually, I think that the risks have been overdone somewhat.
Okay. So perhaps the overall picture isn't bad, but obviously some areas of the market will suffer. What areas of the market do you think are going to be worst affected? And would you say that there are any assets or areas that investors should avoid?
Yes, well, I've already highlighted Europe as an area that I would probably specifically avoid. But a lot of things have been priced in, you know. So, for example, the UK small caps and the which can be, you know, represented by the FTSE 250, that has already underperformed the FTSE 100 this year. And it has fallen quite substantially again today. And so, you know, there is a time when actually these prices become attractive again. So So people will probably be saying, and the market is definitely saying, that UK house builders are going to find it difficult going forward. They're saying that the UK domestic banks are going to find it difficult going forward, and London commercial property is going to find it difficult. But I think as of today, those fears and risks have been priced in. So I would be an advocate of a well-diversified portfolio within the UK, including large caps, and now including the small cap arena. And I would be looking overseas as well, and probably more towards Asia, more towards the US, and less towards Europe, as I said.
Okay. Now, you did hint at some things being priced in, and, you know, obviously there's been falls. So would you single out any bargain opportunities for investors, or is this a dangerous strategy?
Okay, so one of the bargains that I haven't actually talked about, one of the things I think is very interesting right now is the corporate debt market. Corporate debt has fallen in price and is at attractive levels, and it is really pricing in default rates that just of a disaster, and we're not having a disaster. And in fact, default rates in the US even are at less than 1%. So pricing in default rates right now as a disaster level is kind of crazy. So for people who want income, the corporate debt market, the UK and globally, is a really interesting place to look right now. I think the fares have been overdone. And then if you want to take a little bit more risk, the other area...
Just to stop you there, I mean, obviously, you know, that's a general area, but let's say getting down to the area of individual investors, how can they access that corporate debt? What kind of funds, like what kind of bond funds should they be using to access that?
Yes, so there's funds that we have on our list. We have the M&G Corporate Bond Fund, we have the Fidelity Strategic Bond Fund, Fidelity Money Builder Fund, Income Fund, Kane Strategic Bond Fund, okay. We have the Kane High Yield Fund.
Is there any particular area or sector, or would you say that should people looking at just plain vanilla corporate bond funds, should be looking at strategic bond funds? Should there be, you know, risking a high yield bond fund? Is there any particular type of bond fund that, you know, is the best option for, you know, kind of like private investors, you know, saving
private
up for
investors, I mean, I think something like the strategic bond funds are good at the moment because these managers are building up their holdings in corporate bonds, and I've heard from a few this morning that that's in fact what they're doing.
Okay.
Although liquidity isn't great. In times of stress, liquidity in the corporate bond market becomes very slim, so even on the buying and on the selling, but definitely that's an area that the strategic bond fund managers are finding attractive, and the high yield managers, they're already in these stocks, so they're good to go. And high yield definitely is an interesting place for investors, not only
presumably if they have a higher risk appetite, though, because high yield debt is a very, very risky area, is it not?
Yes, no, this is quite an interesting topic because risk is, yes, so yes, let's say high yield risk is high relative to normal bonds and gilts, but probably relative to equities, it's about on par. So if you're prepared to buy income in the equity space, then buying income in the high yield space has roughly the same risk characteristics about it. But the other thing about it is that there are times when bonds are more risky or investments are more risky than other times in a market cycle. So I would say that even though investors may say, right, today it's quite scary because we've just voted out of the EU and there's a lot of uncertainty, I'll buy gilts. Well, gilts are already being priced for the fair factor is already priced in. We think that they're expensive. So they've been bought for safety purposes. The high yield and the corporate bonds have been left to hang out to dry to a certain extent. And actually, as of today, the risk is a little bit less than normal to buy these areas. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, yes. Are there any other opportunities mentioned? I mean, banks have plummeted, but I mean, you know, the post-financial crisis are probably, you know, in a better position they've been in the past. Would you say that banks or perhaps financials funds are an opportunity?
Yes, so I found it actually particularly difficult to find a good financials fund as such. But we know managers who have been starting to add to their banking holdings. And Richard Buxton at Old Mutual is one of them. And he before this vote, he saw them as very attractive. And And also the other person who is worth mentioning is Alistair Mundy at Investec,
yes,
who runs the UK Special Situations Fund. He has filled his boots effectively with UK banks. And in his situation, he's bought them all because he can't differentiate between the idiosyncratic risk of the individual bank. So he's basically bought the sector as it is. But these banks have come out of a financial crisis. They're stronger than they were. They're taking less risk. They will benefit when interest rates go up. And I think that agenda has probably moved out a little bit now because of the Brexit vote. But banks are a good long-term investment. And I get the point and I understand it, and I think these are the types of instruments that funds and the sector that investors should be looking at, especially for the long term. You know, Lloyds started paying a dividend. I don't see, because of this vote, that I can't see really what would change.
Okay. Now, another asset that people turn to in times of turmoil is gold. Gold's been actually doing quite well because of nervousness over, you know, what's going on. Is it too late to jump in here? Do you think gold's going to have a good run ahead? Is it going to be a good opportunity for people over the coming days and months?
Look, gold, people get very excited about gold, and gold has already jumped about 4% today. But what's really interesting about gold is that it's really only in times like this that people buy it.
Mm.
So the other time that people were buying it was in January, February this year, when people were really worried about global growth and oil sales for $28 a barrel. and people, if you remember, were worried about China. Mm. And then since then, gold hasn't done anything much particularly, but it has perked up in this month and definitely today on the back of the Brexit vote. So, you know, I'm a bit of a skeptic on gold. I find it's a very hard asset class to value. And therefore, my view today is that the world isn't ending, and because of that, I think that there is some optimism and some opportunities out there for the UK, and therefore I think gold's over. You know, I wouldn't be buying gold today.
Okay, some really good points. Thank you, Michelle. Now, Kate, you've been looking at how investment analysts and wealth managers have been reacting to the news that we're going to leave the European Union. What are they advising investors to do?
I think similar to what Michelle was saying, that the general verdict is just don't panic and do anything right now, and particularly don't sell right now, just as markets have fallen, because obviously the only way that you actually feel the loss that we've seen is if you sell out now and crystallise it. Mm. So although it does feel very scary and a lot of people will be feeling quite bleak, I'm sure, about how their investments look, the only thing to do really is just wait and see what happens, wait till the dust has settled. So quite a lot of people, I mean, Andrew Craig at Plain English Finance has gone as far as saying just don't do anything at all. Okay. Others are saying actually what you need to think is just don't change anything about what you would normally do. Mm. You know, over the long term, you know, you're meant to invest over cycles. And so you really just need to keep ploughing on as normal with a very diversified portfolio and don't make any sudden rash decisions. I mean, ultimately, it takes a very intelligent person to be able to time markets. Yeah. And you know, most of us just shouldn't bother trying to do that.
Mm. Especially if you're saving for a pension, I imagine, exactly, over 30 years.
Yeah. So really the thing to do is that, I mean, some people I guess would say there are opportunities out there now just because of prices. Mm. But I think most people are saying wait and see and don't sell in a kind of rash panic.
Okay, so stay calm. Mm. Now, while it's not a good idea to take a knee-jerk reaction to world events, especially if you're a long-term investor, it is generally a good idea to hold funds that are likely to perform well even when markets plummet. Problem is, identifying these funds is a much harder task. But Emma, you've come across a way of identifying funds and managers who might weather harder times better, such as what we're going through now. What's this method?
We looked at fund managers who were active during the 2008-2009 financial crisis and who were able to, you know, perform better than their benchmarks. And in some cases, some of them actually returned positive returns, even with that, you know, incredibly bad market. So we looked at fund managers that did well in that situation. And we also looked at the fund managers that had also managed to maintain a good performance at the start of this year when there was a lot of volatility around the commodity sell-off. So we were looking at managers that had a long-term track record and had managed to perform well in falling markets in those two instances.
Okay, and who are some of the managers and funds that this research threw up?
Yeah, so we had Francis Brooke, who's manager of Troy Trojan Income Fund, Nick Train, manager of CF Lindsay Train UK Equity Fund, Sebastian Lyon, who's manager of Personal Assets Trust, and Anthony Cross and Julian Foch, who managed Lyon Trust Special Situations. Michelle mentioned Fidelity Strategic Bond. We also sort of came across them, and that's managed by Ian Spreadbury.
Yeah.
And I think she also mentioned Alistair Mundy, who manages the Investec UK Special Situations.
And the Cautious.
And the Cautious Managed Fund as well.
Yeah, so. And Temple Bar Investment Trust. So
yes.
He's got quite a few.
So, those are just some of the managers that I've picked out, but we did look at about over 20 or so.
Yeah, which people can see if they read the article. Now, did these managers have any common attributes?
Yes. I mean, what we found from speaking to commentators is that a lot of these funds and the managers that run them share a quality sort of defensive bias when they're choosing companies. And so they tend to opt for businesses that are quite economically robust, you would say, to the economic cycle. They've got strong brands in many cases, predictable earnings. So, for example, stocks concentrating in pharmaceuticals or tobacco, where they've got greater clarity of earnings. Mm-hmm. So when there is a downturn in the markets, these are the companies that tend to be a little bit more robust to what's going on.
Michelle, you spoke to Emma about this and have done some research into this. What kind of managers have you found to fare better during market storms?
Okay, so fairly much the same as just what Emma said, actually. I'd written down a list and I was just ticking them off as Emma was talking. So the interesting thing about these managers who weather storms, it tends to be the ones that perhaps don't really outperform when the market's got a lot of upward momentum because, as Emma said, they stick to quality, defensiveness, often buying companies that are cheaper than their asset values, so what I would call value-type companies. So those are the sort of ones that have done well. I would also highlight some of the income funds that fall into that list. So a lot of the funds that have high yields or are seeking high yields. So, say, Richard Corwell at the Threadneedle UK Income Fund is one that I would highlight. But all the others, as Emma said.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that these managers can lag strongly rising markets. Are there any other risks or potential downsides of these particular managers or styles that you would like to highlight?
Not particularly. I think that, you know, it's all about investors having knowing what their long-term goals are and not getting too greedy and definitely having a diversified portfolio. So these managers who we've just highlighted tend to, especially somebody like Alistair Mundy, you know, it's in degrees, but some Alistair Mundy his performance is quite cyclical. So when everybody else is feeling very doom and gloomish and like the financial crisis and probably like now, his fund tends to do particularly well. But then he still does well, but he doesn't do as well as some of the growth managers in an upward running market.
Yeah.
So the idea is that not to expect all your managers or all your funds to be outperforming all the time.
Mm.
That just doesn't happen. So there are no more risks, I think, being involved in these sorts of funds than, say, the other sorts of funds that neither Emma and I have talked about, but some of the funds that focus a bit more on the growth side of things, like, I don't know, Artemis UK Growth or even Richard Buxton, to be honest, and Majedi and some of these other managers that are more, BlackRock's another good example, are more growth-focused. You know, they're good to have in your portfolio as well.
Yeah, so to sum it up, basically, don't have just one kind of style or one kind of manager. Have a nice, diverse spread. Yeah. Emma, you looked at the risks of following a particular investment style. What would you like to highlight?
It's similar to what Michelle's just said, really, because, I mean, if you are going to kind of take a punt on any particular style, the risk is that when conditions change, actually those kind of approaches won't work as effectively.
Yeah.
So, you know, we saw 2008, start of this year, these quality defensive stocks have worked, but, you know, sort of, you know, in the main. But the issue is that if potentially, you know, this Brexit vote, for example, turns out to be very good for the country and we get a lot of economic growth, and suddenly we might have a rotation towards economic recovery sort of positions and companies and stocks and funds, and then arguably those qualities defensive stocks won't have done as well. So there's always the risk that, you know, things could change.
So diversify. This year has been quite an unusual one for investment trust industry, in that up until a few days ago there hadn't been any initial public offerings, or IPOs for short, the first time in 7 years that the first quarter passed without an offering. But earlier this week, the drought ended with the first investment trust IPO of the year. Kate, can you tell us more about this investment trust launch?
Yeah, so this is Hadrian's Wall Secured Investments, and it raised 80 million, which was short of its original target of 150 million. It's a trust which is going to invest in UK small to medium sized enterprise commercial loans, and those are going to be secured in a range of assets, including equipment, plant and machinery, real estate and receivables.
Okay, so not mainstream, but no. Very much in keeping of a lot of recent launches, and it's got an income focus. Michelle, now that the referendum is out of the way, do you expect that there'll be more IPOs, both of investment trusts and more generally?
Yes, I do. And in fact, I do know that there have been some people sitting on the sidelines waiting to launch them. Because we've had an outvote, you know, the timing of these may be not as immediate as perhaps they were first thinking. But yes, I do expect some more.
Okay. Now, there may have not been many investment trust IPOs this year, but there have been lots of exchange-traded fund launches. Kate, are there any particular trends in terms of exchange-traded fund or ETF launches?
Yeah, well, I think we're seeing a real income trend at the moment. And I mean, it makes sense in a low rate environment. Obviously, everybody wants income. So we've seen quite a lot of these ETFs coming to market, and particular smart beta. So these are ETFs weighted by anything other than market cap. And so we're seeing kind of interesting innovation, both in fixed income and equities, and also quite an interesting new focus on quality income, I think. So Lyxor had launched a range of quality income ETFs a few years ago, and I feel like now that's really where the push is coming from. And it does make sense, because in the bond space, people are worried about bond indices being very heavily weighted, obviously, towards the most indebted issuers. That is just how you make up a bond index. And people are kind of keen to screen out some of the higher quality payers to reduce the risk. In the equity space, you know, we've seen the over the last year, people being quite worried about dividend cuts and things. So it makes sense that people are trying to look for income which is sustainable, and the companies which can keep paying on dividends. And that's, you know, just because yield, obviously, as a figure is a bit troublesome, in that a high yield obviously could be an indication of high income, but equally could be an indication of a falling share price. So that really, I think for a while people have been saying, you know, quality income is where the innovation needs to come from. I think we're just starting to see that happen now.
Okay, and what are some very recent examples of smart beta income ETF launches?
So just last week, WisdomTree launched two quality income ETFs, and they're focused on quality dividend growth. So looking for the, you know, quality dividend payers of tomorrow, rather than looking at, for example, those who have grown dividends a lot in the past. And not this month, but also very recently, Lombard Odier have bought out their smart beta bond ETFs, which is what I was talking about trying to screen out those most indebted issuers and look for the bonds which, you know, could keep paying out and where there is lower default risk.
Okay, some useful additions to portfolios, hopefully, then. Michelle, what do you make of smart beta sustainable dividend ETFs? Are they a good way for investors to get income?
Yes, they are. They're a good way because one of the I agree with everything that Emma said, by the way, but one of the things about the ETFs is that you get more holdings within an ETF. So active managers, for example, who are trying to do the same thing tend to hold less stocks. The other thing is that the ETFs are cheaper, much cheaper, and than an active fund, and so that makes them very attractive as well.
Okay, some useful ideas. Thank you, Michelle and Kate. That brings us to the end of this week's Personal Finance podcast, so it just remains to thank Kate Bealey, Deputy Personal Finance Editor, Emma Ajimang, Personal Finance Writer, and Michelle McGrade, Chief Investment Officer at TD Direct Investing. You can read more about resilient managers and funds, investment trust launches, and sustainable income ETFs in this week's issue of Investors Chronicle and the website. Thank you for listening.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.